Chapter 27. The brushed steel doors parted, and she strolled out of the elevator car and into the underground garage. She was prettier than he had given her credit for. Maybe it was that she had exchanged that gray business suit she had worn the other day for a form-fitting black dress and heels. Or was it that she had washed all that silly lacquer out of her highlighted blonde hair and let it fall over her bare brown shoulders in spaghetti straps? Her skin was indeed very brown, and her legs were so perfectly hairless and smooth that they practically reflected the dull ambient lighting. A small, silky black bag dangled off her left shoulder, swaying as she moved. The only sounds in the cavernous car park were the muffled whirring of exhaust fans and the echoes of her pointed heels clickety-clacking on the concrete slab. Her calf muscles pulsed as she walked. This was perfect, he thought. Something to keep him occupied while he marked off the days until he paid off the first installment of his debt to Jesse Stone. Frankly, the very thought of spending weeks on end in Dallas, with nothing to do except working part-time at three dead-end jobs, nearly bored him to tears. Revenge was worth a lot to him, everything, but boredom could be pure hell. He had no choice, though, because there were so many contingencies to plan for, so many moving parts to attend to. Having a plan B wouldn't be sufficient with a man like Stone, especially after how things had gone so wrong back up north. It was, he knew, his own fault. He had let hubris get the better of him. That silliness with the car tires. He shouldn't have done that. He shook his head even as he thought of it. It was a severe miscalculation, and had led to the messes in Boston and Salem. But payback was so much sweeter when they knew he was coming for them, and they were powerless to stop him. The notion of the condemned waiting for him to pay them a call excited him. Daydreaming of them, searching for him under every rock, peeking around every corner, seeing him in every shadow, looking for him everywhere but where they should look, was almost as powerful as the kill itself. Almost. Now, though, he had to anticipate Stone's moves. What if he had finally figured out who'd put the bullets in all those tires? What if he had warned his ex? What if the cops knew he was in Dallas? What if? Uncertainty was usually to his advantage, because it was his victims who suffered from its corrosive effects. When he took a job, he worked hard to figure out the best way to come at his target, how to maximize results and minimize the chances of his capture. Contingencies? He always had contingencies. But because of his own foolishness, he had made his task exponentially more difficult. Yet he found he could not focus on Stone or contingencies. Since getting into town, he had been preoccupied by one thing and one thing only: the discourtesy of the woman at the barbecue restaurant. Dealing with the latter, he reasoned, would help him with the former. It was one of life's great contradictions that distraction could sometimes help you concentrate. As she approached her red Audi convertible, the sound of her heels made his heart beat that much faster. He wondered how she would die, easy or hard. He liked it better when they died hard, clinging to, clutching at the tiniest specks of hope, or stubbornly clawing to hang on to whatever time they had left, no matter the pain. Pain so intense that not even unconsciousness provided an escape. He smiled that smug smile to himself as he lowered his head below the dashboard. Then the clacking of her heels came to an abrupt halt. He peeked up above the dashboard to see why she had stopped. There she was, 20 feet in front of her car, cell phone in hand. "No, Jordan, honey, I'm leaving now," she said, her voice bouncing off the concrete. "I'll call you back when I get out of the garage and on the road." "Okay, see you in a bit." He lowered his head back down and listened as her heels got louder and louder. He ran the tips of his fingers along the length of the syringe. In the syringe was his own proprietary little cocktail of drugs. All they ever felt was a pinch, and before they had any idea of what was happening to them, they were in another world. Many of his victims had told him that the cocktail induced gloriously vivid dreams, dreams that were wildly random, but often hyper-real. They often begged for him to dose them with those same drugs once he began working on them. Sometimes, when it suited his state of mind, he did as they asked, and he always enjoyed watching the horror on their faces when they came out of it and realized where they were and whom they were with. Now that she was so close to him, he imagined he could almost smell her perfume. He waited until she had settled into the camel-colored leather seat of her Audi. Then he got out of his car and came up from behind her.
"Hi there," he said, friendly as could be.
Startled, she whipped her head around. At first, the only thing that registered on her lovely face was confusion. There was no hint of recognition. Just as he thought she would, she'd forgotten he even existed. He screwed his face up into a frown.
"Oh, you don't remember me."
Confusion changed quickly to anger.
"Listen, ass."
But she didn't finish the thought, distracted by the sharp pinch in her neck. When she went lax, he pushed her back in her seat to make sure she didn't fall against the horn. He pulled the Honda up in front of her Audi and popped the Civic's rear lid. After folding her neatly into the trunk, he stroked her hair, ran the back of his hand along the smooth brown skin of her cheek, and slammed the lid shut. Almost immediately, his mind turned to thoughts of Jesse Stone and Jen.